Side pocket. Chalk up your cue stick and rack up those balls. Now get ready, get set, break. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Sean.
And the three of us, though you guys may not know it, it's been a while. Here we are.
Yes.
We're caught up.
It's been a whole 7 days.
Yeah, a whole seven days, and we're all good. But you know who's not good with us?
Who?
Some of the listeners. They left some mail that we have to answer to. So for the first time ever, we have a little bit of listener mail of just some general thoughts that I thought we'd do before we go into the normal episode. Are you guys cool
am
with
I going to be hurt by these things?
No, most of them are actually just thoughts.
Okay.
Not even about nostalgia.
Just about shower thoughts, if you will.
Okay.
You know, things that happen in their daily life
what
and
they're
they seeking
have
advice.
Dinner?
Yeah, this is Maury / Jerry Springer segment of the show.
I can't wait.
No, it's not. Okay, this is actually just thoughts on video games that we've talked about recently. We have Chris Logel first, and sorry if I butcher anyone's last names here. I'm just saying them as they appear. Chris writes, I can only get to the final battle with Jaws using my rapid-fire controller. The final battle is the most frustrating, and I have never managed to complete it. Thoughts?
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's not a very good final battle. It's hard to do that. I understand. Your pain is heard.
It is tough. So I'm trying to remember. You have to build up your power
essentially.
So I wonder how much power there is. Because even with a lot of power, it's tough.
I think it goes up to seven or nine. And from what I remember, I actually did do a test of like how many shots does it take for a level 1 power to defeat Jaws. And the answer I got with a rapid-fire controller was that you can't do it.
because it times out before you'll never
be able to finish him off, and he'll restore enough health.
Oh, right, that's right. It restores his health, too.
So I definitely understand the frustration there, but I do think, like, you know, that's the grindy part of the game that we kind of complained about, that there wasn't more to do with the ports and stuff like that. All right, then we have Chris Stenshall, who writes, Karate Kid is brutally frustrating. Jaws and Goonies are still fun to play, but that might be because I had them both as a kid.
I 100% agree that Karate Kid is brutally frustrating. I felt like I needed to punish myself to get through that game.
The only thing I could do in that game was kick. Anything else, I couldn't make contact.
Things would just come out of nowhere, hit you, and you really didn't have a lot of...
Just an exercise in jank,
And how do you feel about, like, nostalgia with games as you're a kid? Like, have you ever gone back to a game and said, like, wow, this stinks? Or do you still, like it just because you liked it so much when you were a kid?
1942, I liked when I was a kid.
Okay.
And now I went back and I was like, this is horrible.
I remember loving the original Twisted Metal, and then I went back and played Twisted Metal. And I couldn't understand what was happening. I couldn't understand how to control the cars anymore. It was a mess. It operates at 12 frames per second. I don't know how I could do that.
I wasn't crazy about it. I remember playing it as a kid, but when I went back to it, I was like, what are the controls of this game?
The original Star Fox for Super Nintendo was like that for me, because the game actually runs at, like, I think max, it's like capped at 15 frames per second.
Yeah.
But it goes as low as like 10 in certain scenes. And I was like, how did anybody ever play this? So I do understand, like, I think for the most part, if you liked it as a kid, you're probably going to like it still growing up, because you have, like, an attachment to it or remember, like, memories with it. But occasionally, like, if a game is jank, it remains jank.
Exactly.
All right. And then we have Darren, and this is about Zanuck. I know they're not exactly sequels, but essentially, Gunak for the NES is far and away my favorite shooter on the NES. And Space Megaforce is my favorite SNES shooter. Both are updated versions of Zanuck. I wish they got a shout out on the show. Should we try them?
I guess we should try them.
Yeah, it seems like we're going to get to Gunak eventually.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what episode number that is. It might be the 300s, the 400s, but
it might be in a couple years from now.
But my love for shmups is growing as we continue to play through this library. So I say, sure, I'll give Space Megaforce a try.
Yeah.
What system is that?
That's for SNES. Super Nintendo.
Okay.
Yep,
Super Nintendo usually delivers.
Yeah, that's a, by the way, Sean, what you did there, that's a debated topic. A lot of people are like, do you call it the SNES? Do you call it the Super Nintendo? Do you call it the SNES? Apparently, SNES is like the do not say that one.
I say them all, and I don't really care. A lot too, yeah.
Which one, if you had to, though, out of the three, which one do you go to?
I mean, Super Nintendo is what I called it when I was a kid. And then, no, I kind of said Super NES. No, it's Super Nintendo. Yeah.
The reason why I don't say SNES is because...
It sounds gross.
And you also don't call the NES the NES.
Some people call it the NES. We say NES every day.
Oh,
NES
shoot.
The NES.
It's more of a wordplay thing, but I see where you're going. Okay. And last but not least, Jesse Waldeck writes, it was joked about DK being in Punch-Out and relegated to being a spectator, if you remember we talked about that in the arcade version, but it was never brought up that he is the final boss in the Wii version of the game. I didn't know that either. I checked it out on YouTube. It's actually really cool. I'll try to link to it. I think that that's wonderful, and I always thought Donkey Kong should have a place. I'd like to see someone do like a ROM hack.
Is he's the final boss, and he's replacing Mike Tyson, or is he after?
Well, Mike Tyson's
Mr.
not in a Wii version.
Yeah.
You know, it's keep in mind this is the like fully with the motion controls and everything.
Right,
it's not
but it's not like there's they're Mr. Dream replacement of Mike Tyson, and then the final boss.
Right. It is Donkey Kong.
I would just like to say that as much as you might learn random factoids from us through the show, we can also learn from you because we are not authorities on anything.
Yeah, we don't know what we're talking about.
Literally playing these games for the first time.
Yeah, you know? that's the idea.
We have questionable backgrounds. None of us are qualified for these positions.
Right. And no one pays us to do it. So
it actually works
harm,
out
no
pretty
foul.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys, it's time to get into Side Pocket. It was developed by Data East. Data East, remember? Side Pocket?
Oh.
Yeah.
Side Pocket.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to put a little music cue in between Side Pocket.
You probably forgot
this, so.
During the music cue.
It's true.
Yeah. So Side Pocket, developed by Data East, first on the arcade in 1986, ported a year later, but also just about a month or so after Lunar Pool. Remember that? We did that episode recently.
I remember.
It's a classic.
I think it was like episode 75 or 74, Lunar Pool. And we had good feelings about that game for the most part. It was a pretty competent port of billiards with this added gravity and friction effect. I think it was just called friction,
just
actually.
Friction,
right? Yeah. You just adjust the friction on the moon. That's all.
Right.
Can we get some first impressions, starting with Sean?
Well, since Lunar Pool is my only point of reference, aside from terrible Flash games from the early aughts, and I guess maybe that... a couple like PS2 games. This is so Lunar Pool is the only thing I have reference to. I don't think that the moment to moment gameplay in this is as good as Lunar Pool. It's interesting. I like the, it's actually set up to be in real life kind of pool. Like you're not on the moon. I like that. But, that was my first impression.
All right, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, my first thought was that, this is pool. It's just regular pool at first, it seems. And I do agree that physics-wise, before you get into the friction and everything, physics-wise, things didn't seem to react quite as good as they did in Lunar Pool.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, it just felt like kind of what you'd expect.
Okay. And I think, for me, this opened my eyes to thinking, like, Lunar Pool is more like a... like a mini golf game with multiple balls to hit, and this is actually billiards. I think that's what I took away from this.
I completely forgot that Lunar Pool was mostly just weird shapes.
Right, weird shapes and stuff like that. And this is just like, this is what you see is what you get. You're playing a billiards game. And it's kind of funny that in just 1 month, a new billiard game has become completely available for this system. And I know you guys aren't crazy about it, but I'm going to say I like this one more.
Interesting.
Okay. Then Lunar Pool.
We'll get into it.
Yeah, let's do just that. First, just to get some terminology out of the way. In billiards, does anyone know what English means?
It is the... you go ahead.
You seem more confident than me, but I was going to say, is that when you put a little spin on it?
Yeah, it depends. It's where you hit the cue to give it spin or backspin and all that fun stuff.
I had no idea about this before, but it's also a thing in tennis and even like it just refers to a ball in general, I guess, of when you hit it. So it's even can be done in baseball, and it was just like I saw it in the manual and it was like English, and then talked about like a bunch of things that had nothing to do with the English language, and I was like, hold up a minute, what are you talking about? But I do have to give a shout out to the manual, because there are several pages of diagrams on how to hit a cue ball, how to use the cushion, how to like pocket balls from different angles. It's actually really incredible.
See, I didn't
that they
read,
went through this length.
I didn't read the manual to this one.
Yeah, there's
I very
a whole,
rarely don't.
Yeah, you usually are manual authority. Sam likes to think he is, but you usually are the actual manual authority. But it tells you, like, this is the head rail. This is the foot spot. This is the center spot. This is the side pocket. Like, it's like,
yeah,
that's nice. But then it also explains, and you'll need this in the game, what it means to hit the cue ball if you follow, if you draw, if you do right or left, or if you're just hitting from the center, which were things that I didn't use that much in the game, but we'll talk about that when we get to mechanics. I just think that it's really nice for a manual to include not only a bunch of diagrams on how to do it, but then lessons on like things to do. And then the game follows up with a whole lessons mode.
Right.
The manual for this game seems like it could just be a manual for billiards in general.
It probably was. And then they just added screenshots of the game into it.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, have any of other sports games dealt with like how to actually play the sport in this much detail? Or is it?
I think that when they do, it's usually contextualized much stronger within
the
game.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, in football you have to get past
it. Doesn't explain
10 yards,
like the, it doesn't explain like the detailed rules of football. Like, this is explaining a lot of detail about pool.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Sean, I think you did this for us in the Lunar Pool episode. Can you take us through the objective of billiards? What do you do in a game of billiards?
In general, because there are many different billiards games, the objective is to get the colored balls into the little holes in the corners and sides of the billiards table. And you use a stick to do so. In this game, your stick shoots an imaginary light out, and it tells you what your ball is going to do if you hit it straight on. And then you just go on and so forth until there are none left.
That sounds like pool to me.
We better cross-reference that with his first description of pool and make sure it all adds up.
I don't know. Right.
Well, that was pool on the moon. Anything could have happened.
That's
happened.
A good point.
Theoretically, pool on the moon, if you hit the ball, it just goes on forever.
No.
I don't know. There's friction on the moon.
Sean's also our space guy, so it helps that he's really into like NASA and stuff, so it helps that he's on this podcast for twofolds today. He knows a lot about billiards and he knows a lot about space.
Right. We're gonna talk about space on this. You were right. If you're on Lunar Pool and you just set friction to zero, then yeah, it goes on forever.
Great. And that was a problem because then it never ended. You would have to soft reset the game. Yeah. Before we get into the main modes of Side Pocket, there is a training mode that kind of gives you like different lessons and practice shots. Did anybody try that at all?
I tried it briefly, but I did feel like so that's where it gives you a shot to do. You have to attempt the shot first. Then it says, no, here's the answer.
Oh,
I didn't do that. If assuming you don't get it right.
Which, trust me, I didn't.
Right. I love that part, though. You kind of glossed over it there for a second, but I love the video replay of showing you, like, no, do it like this.
I liked it, too, but I wish it
is it
kind
that
of
condescending
it
when it does it?
No, it's actually very quick. It's like, no, this is the right answer, and it does it. And it's like, wait, pause it. I gotta look at what you did for a second.
It helped a lot because it wasn't like, here's what you do when the ball is, like, three-fourths of the way across from you. It was actually talking about, like, when you should use draw or when you should use follow on your cue stick, or like how much power to apply in a given situation.
You're talking about when it sets up a trick shot for you and asks you to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I didn't care for about it, though, was that it asks you to do the shot first, then it quickly shows you it, but doesn't give you a chance to then try it. It just moves on to the next shot.
Right.
So I never feel like I get to see if I'm improving or if I'm actually learning from it.
I think that if they'd have like bookended it with attempts, that would have been better. But I do like the here, do your best, and then showing you. I think that's a good way to learn.
Yeah, I would have preferred like a textbook that opens up, and then you select like the lesson, and then
you can try it over and over.
Lesson.
I thought you were being sarcastic. Yeah.
Let's talk about the manual again, right? It's practically a textbook. But I do think that having something like that is worth it for a game that's actually trying to simulate billiards, because if you've, you know, it's not like baseball or football. The rules aren't like apparent to everyone who plays them, and you might not know, like, I don't know, in baseball, basic strategy is learned to any kid who plays in Little League. If you're picking up a billiards game, there's a chance you don't know how to, like, hit a ball from the opposite side to go in the corner pocket or something like that,
yeah,
based on an angle.
I don't know, like, what context you mean that in, though, because the first time I played Madden, I didn't know the rules of football. Like,
okay.
I was a little kid, and I'm like, my dad watches sports. So I think that you can come in blind in any genre.
Right. Okay, and so it sounds like you did come in blind because you passed over the training, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know how, like, a pool table works, but...
No, yeah. I just meant, like, do you feel like you actually did improve as you continued to play the game?
I'll get to why I didn't, okay. But no.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, Lunar Pool could have used something like this,
yeah.
I think any game can use a training mode in a simulation style environment.
Yeah.
You don't need a training mode in like a shmup, you know.
No.
You don't need to learn
shoot
like
this.
Here's how to deal right. with shooting these targets. Like, I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah.
You'll learn that through gameplay.
I do think it is really cool that this actually would be giving you real world knowledge on how to play real pool. Like, it's like, you know, it's giving you some insight on how to actually.
Unfortunately, though, it will never teach me how to hold the cue stick,
that's
the one thing that I really suck at when it comes to billiards. All right, so let's get into the controls of the game, and controls, I mean everything about playing this game: physics, how to hit the ball, styles of hitting the ball, and stuff like that. So, does anybody want to talk through their feelings? We don't have to compare to Lunar Pool right away. We can just talk about what we liked and didn't like about the setup. I'll start.
Sure.
The thing that immediately came to mind to me was something I asked for in Lunar Pool, which was to finally get a meter. I had talked about that and how Lunar Pool was kind of missing that, and I would like to have seen that the way it was done in golf. This isn't exactly how I described, because there's still...
How do they do it in Lunar Pool?
I think you just pull back.
Yeah.
Right? You just pull a cursor back however hard you want to hit it.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
And so with this one, you actually see like a minimum and maximum force, and you can just let it like slide until you get where you want it to be. I think if you don't do anything at all, it will register the smallest hit possible.
No, it keeps going back.
It'll keep going back?
Yeah. I think I got like a foul one time for whatever you call it.
I don't know. I was able to just let it run its course, and it would come back.
Okay,
eventually.
I never tested it because I didn't attempt it, because in the other games that I've been trained about swing meters, it's usually that if you let it go back to the beginning, that counts as like a failed stroke.
Maybe, I don't know.
But no, I'm just saying I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But I really liked the inclusion of this, because this is the kind of thing where it does matter, because most people would want to hit with max force, and you immediately learn, like, no, you'll really crush the ball.
Yeah.
You know, like, nobody ever uses their 100% potential when they hit the cue ball into, like, a ball that's right next to them.
That's true. I would say that as far as the physics of this game goes, I really don't like it in comparison to Lunar Pool, because... In that one, you were able to customize it to what you felt was how a ball should go across the felt or whatever the material is. This game felt sticky. And I don't know if it's just because I don't know if in this game there's less real estate on the screen for the actual billiards table.
Everything, the balls are definitely smaller in this game compared to Lunar Pool and stuff like that. I can't say if the actual, like, screen sizes, but it does seem like there's a lot of unused real estate for the actual billiards, because that UI at the top is so chunky.
And also,
I don't know if this is what you mean by sticky, but it feels like the ball is like trudging through something. It feels, everything feels very slow and heavy.
There isn't as much momentum as it felt was in the other game.
Right. Granted, it's subtle, but us having played these so recently, back to back, it's very noticeable.
Right, and when you're trying to break the ball, even at the very beginning, you're trying to break them.
Yeah,
it's like one usually moves, and you know, if you hit it hard enough, it goes into a pocket usually.
Yeah.
But otherwise, your next shot is usually just like
break it again.
Yeah, break everything again, and hope that another one goes in, because you got a streak of.
Yeah.
They're worth more points when you continuously get them in and stuff like that. I guess now that you mention it, Joe, about comparing the two, Lunar Pool definitely felt lighter, even on its default standard setting, right. Yeah. On its standard setting, which I think was like 60-something out of 255.
Something like that.
But this game overall to me just felt like every shot that I tried to do, I usually wanted to keep my power meter like somewhere in the middle if I was confident about the shot I was making.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if I went too little, it wouldn't reach the ball. It, yeah. It wouldn't make it to the shot because there's just a very extreme difference between min and max for what is a relatively small meter.
Yeah.
So you kind of always want to aim for that halfway point and just hope that like that's just enough power to get the ball into the pocket.
In terms of other things that you can control in this game, and it's my fault. I didn't read the manual, but I also like had some temporary blindness and I didn't even see the indicator that showed you where you were going to hit the cue ball. So I didn't even know that you could put English on the ball.
Huh.
So I tried playing this game with direct strikes the entire time, and that's why I was so bad at it.
Well, here's why you didn't know about that, okay? Yes, the manual would tell you, but it's also not that intuitive.
It's not. I did eventually learn.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, you have to hold the button down and then...
Yeah, so for those of you that know billiards well, there is a second objective that you want to hit the balls in order, too. So that means getting the first one in and then number two, number three. Yeah. You won't know by the colors, unless you're really like a billiards master, you won't know by the colors which number is which. So when you press B, it reveals the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad touch. I couldn't think of a better way...
It also shows in the top left the color that you should be aiming for.
Oh, that's a good tip. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that. Okay, that's good. But I did like the, you know, revealing all the numbers and kind of switching between that mode, essentially. Yeah. But another thing is that if you want to change the English on the ball, you have to, while pressing the B button, so holding it down, then you move your cursor around to change the type of spin you put on the ball. And that, I thought, was like, can't we just hit, like, select to get like into the cue ball mode or something like that. Like, I also, that wasn't apparent to me right away either. It was only when I started watching other videos that I was like, oh, people are like, you know, because follow and draw, I think, are the most important ones. The spin left and right is like for people who really know what they're doing, but follow and draw are important to set up your next shot.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just hitting dead on each time, you're just going to be dead in the water wherever you wound up making the connection with the previous ball. Follow lets you move a little further.
Yeah, if you're hitting it directly on, yeah.
And draw lets you kind of, like, bring it back, which I thought was, like, done really well, the follow and draw system in this game. Maybe they were being too generous, considering, like, the amount of skill that they assume the player has, and then proceeding to be like, but he just did the perfect draw shot. Like, there's no meter for that, you know? You just say... I'm going to draw.
This is where I'm going
to
hit it.
Right. I'm going to draw all the way down. So that would mean your cursor moves all the way down to the bottom of the cue. And then you perform a perfect draw hit where it immediately spins. And you can see it. There's a little dot on the white cue ball on the screen. You can see it spin. And it's like, I don't know anybody who's not a professional billiards player who would be able to pull that off.
But again, it's like, you know, when you're in Madden, you throw a deep long ball and you can't do that. But you pressed Y.
Yeah, no one's asking for like, I mean, does this happen? You play Madden more than me. Have they ever made it like flick the right thumbstick to pass?
They have included a bunch of like gimmick mechanics that make it a little bit more skill based. Where at one point they had a vision cone, so that you had to simulate seeing your open receiver before throwing it. And it's they do it, but I mean, I just play on the regular style.
No, I think there's something to be said about that. Maybe I'm asking for too much there, and I don't even know if I necessarily want that. I thought it was just funny that like you hit a ball from a certain direction and winds up doing nothing, but your technique was perfect, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But there is something to be said about, like, simulation versus fun, you know?
Exactly.
You don't want to simulate every single thing.
Nobody wants to be as bad at a game in the video game version as they are in real life.
Yeah, the idea is that it's what is it, wish fulfillment, right?
Yeah,
you want to be, like, the badass pool shark.
Yeah, I'm always thinking of Paul Newman, you know, like from that movie with him.
Paul
and,
Newman.
Yeah, yeah. Him and Tom Cruise in that Martin Scorsese film.
Pool Shark.
Yeah, Jaws. I don't know why I can't think of it. Jaws. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Tom Cruise played the shark. The shark, yeah, the bull shark.
Yeah, that's funny.
I didn't notice that. I just walked into that. All right. So we're making puns here. So before we go into our next segment, I want to make it clear that I'm not crazy. There is a movie with Scorsese, Tom Cruise, and Paul Newman. That's called The Color of Money. However, there is another Paul Newman Billiards film from like 20 years before that, 1961, called The Hustler. And that's with Jackie Gleason, who he plays the legendary Minnesota Fats.
Oh, of course.
No, what's funny is you're going to laugh for a minute. But there is a real-life pool player who then changed his name to Minnesota Fats based off of the Jackie Gleason character in the movie. He wasn't,
legally?
Like, no, not legally. It was like his nickname. Before that, he was like, because he grew up in New York City, so I think he was like Bronx Fats or something like that.
Okay.
And then he was like, no, I'll be Minnesota Fats.
Wow.
Yep. That won't be the last time you hear about Minnesota Fats.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there. We need to talk about Pocket Game, which is how it's referred to on the screen in Side Pocket. And that is, for lack of a better word, the story mode, or as you guys want me to call it, the career mode of this particular game. You compete for the world championship. You start at like the local city level.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just win three games of billiards and then you're competing for the world championship.
That's all it takes.
That's really all it takes. What is different about this mode?
The structure. I mean,
I'm setting it up for you. Like, can you tell me what changes here? What's the biggest change between playing story mode and playing like the nine ball game?
Well, the context is different in that when you win a game, you are treated to the moment after you win, and you immediately seduce a young lady next to you. And then she just challenges you to a trick shot, and then you move on.
But if you don't do well, she's not into it.
She's not into it anymore.
It depends on your points. Yeah, right. Yeah. There's certain times where she will like have a bunch of hearts over her, and then there's other times.
Oh, you know what? I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's true. You need a certain amount
of
points.
Hand?
Yeah, she, like if you do bad, she does like the hand in your face, kind of turn their back on your hand.
So there's a couple things to set up story mode here. Is that so? Just starting at the very beginning when you're at the city level, it basically says you need to get 3,100 points to move on, which is fairly easy. You don't have all the balls, though. I think you only have six in this particular instance. So it sets up just the six balls. You got to hit them in the order, and you want to streak them. If you don't get two in a row, you start to lose lives. And once you lose, your lives are represented by balls as well. And I think you get five. And then once you lose all five, it's game over. And that's just throughout the entire story mode. So
you can regenerate balls, whether it be from hitting balls into called. I don't know what the mechanic is, but it's like I think of it as a called shot.
But that you don't get to choose.
You don't get to choose. It just sort of happens, and that's how they portray.
Basically, a star will appear in one pocket, and that's you're gonna do better if you shoot into that pocket.
But apparently, also if you scratch into that pocket, you get a really weird like bonus.
Yes,
really?
Yeah, it depends on which one it is, but I think that's the Zone Star one.
Yeah, I never attempted to just like actually scratch my ball on purpose, so I never got to see this outside of watching other people play. But that was an interesting to learn that. Yeah,
basically just so this way we can get that out of the way. If the Zone Star pops up and you sacrifice your cue ball in, which will cost you a life,
yeah.
But essentially it will change the table into a different mode where stars appear in all four corner pockets, and then the friction on the table is actually reduced. So there is a little bit of a physics thing.
Interesting.
And then if you sink the last ball in this mode, you get multiple extra lives.
Interesting.
So there is like a risk-reward factor to it. Personally, I would have never tried that. That would have just caused an early game over for me. Yeah. I was having a hard enough time as it was. Not with the very first level. I will say the city level is nice because there's only six balls and they break enough so that you can kind of... I actually did one time successfully get them all in order, which
in
I thought
order,
was really cool.
In a streak?
Not in a streak.
Oh, okay.
But you do get a lot of points just for getting the numbers in order, too, which I thought was nice because there's like two different ways to play the game. One would be to get a lot of points by streaking it, going to the next most obvious ball. And then the other one, if you are okay with losing some lives, might be to try and just get the numbers in order so this way you get a bigger streak that way. I think by doing the numbers and just pocketing the balls in general, I actually scored like 7,100 on the first on the first table.
I think I only got like 5,000 or something.
Yeah,
I have actually no idea.
That's okay. That's okay. Did the girl kiss you?
No.
Okay. So you didn't. That, you missed out. Score
that's
enough.
Why I knew about the hand.
And then the trick shots, they do get harder as you go up in the championship. But the first one is just kind of like, you know, there's nothing. It's like hit the button. Yeah, the ball's like right next to the corner pocket, and it's like, can you make the shot? It's like, I just got six of those in.
Yeah. It's a little patronizing, but I dig it.
Yep.
Also, the trick shot, when there's a certain pocket or pockets that it wants you to get, and instead of putting a star in those pockets, it just says no on all the other pockets. I thought that was really funny. The pockets that you don't want to do, it just says no.
I like to think of it as, like, because I know that maybe the second trick shot, maybe at the state level, there's a bunch of like light bulbs on there. I just like to think that that same woman from the cutscene like took out a bag and just like threw them on on there. Like, this is a tournament setup. What are you doing?
Are we sure the trick shots are the same?
Maybe they shuffled.
Cycle. I feel like my light bulb one was later.
I don't know.
I don't think they shuffled.
No.
I'm pretty confident just because I think for the first two levels, that's really like to my extent of how far I got in this game. And I kept playing the game a lot, I'll be honest, but I just couldn't get past that second level. Yeah. For me, that they kept being the same trick shot.
Gotcha.
So as you move up in the from the city to the state, to the country, to the world championships, the number of balls increases too. And did anybody find that, like, as they added more balls, that made it more challenging or made it, like, you know, hey, now I've got more opportunity?
I think it was harder to do it correctly, whereas you may have inadvertently gotten easier shots. They're not going to be in order, or they're not going to be maybe they'll be streaked, but I think it's harder to do it in order.
Yeah, it's harder to do it, like, as well as it's harder to do it perfectly now, but it's probably, I would say, easier to just
randomly
sink shots.
Yeah.
So I joked early on in this podcast about how bad I was at breaking the balls. But did anybody actually like figure out a strategy for that? Because that was the biggest thing for me, was that starting with more balls meant that the break wasn't going to break as nicely.
Yeah.
And so I was going to mostly be dealing with hitting these balls into each other for a while, and that caused me to lose a lot of lives. I couldn't really figure out a strategy.
I mean, the only thing that seemed to help a little bit, but I don't know how much of this is just me expecting it to be better, is not hitting it head on and hitting it like slightly to the left or slightly to the right.
Yeah, like,
you would in pool.
In my personal experience, I always tried to like hit it a little off center so it's not like, so that the whole bracket isn't absorbing all of that power.
Right.
But I noticed, like, if when I tried to do that, the physics were wonky enough that they just didn't move at all. So you need to hit it directly to get the most, like, potential energy out of it. So it was sort of this damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario.
Yeah. And I did eventually, I put draw onto, like, full. So this way it was all the way down when I was breaking. So this way, after I hit everything, the ball would still kind of go back to where it originally was when it sets up the break
for
you.
Apart.
And then I could break them all again. Yeah. And I was like, that sounds like a good enough strategy for me. So did anybody beat this game? World championships?
Negative. Couldn't get to the Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, you did get to country?
I did get to country, and then I lost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it gets significantly harder. I mean, the point requirements, I think the...
Plus, your lives don't regenerate if you...
if you don't do the things that give you the extra lives. Right. Mm-hmm. If you don't get the bonuses.
So I ended up at, like, the country level with, like, two balls left. So it was difficult.
Got it. And Joe?
I don't remember if I got to country. I don't think I did.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. That's it. That's the end. That's it.
It doesn't really matter if you did or not because you didn't beat
it. I don't
the game,
think I, so exactly.
It gets filed under the many games I did not beat.
Yeah.
There is, though, and this is very strange, in the two-player section of this game, there is a complete nine-ball game that you can't play on your own or with a computer. You can only play with a second player, and it follows the rule of nine-ball pool, which is the first to shoot in the nine balls wins, but player one goes first and continues on their streak until they don't make the shot, and then player two follows, and you can score and actually play like best of three or best of five. And I was like, why can't this mode exist for...
I think they just didn't have a computer AI, because there's no computer AI doing anything else,
anything.
So I guess they just
except for like the pre-rendered, but you know, the stock, like, here's how you do this shot.
Right.
Right.
But they're entirely situational, so I understand why.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Maybe, like, yeah, that would have... It would have just been perfect every time, so you would have had to...
I mean, we already saw what AI does in a billiards game with Lunar Pool, and that computer didn't know what it was doing.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the problem is that you're trying to program, especially on an 8-bit system, you're trying to program, like, priority levels of like getting shots in and power and like where they are in relation to everything. It's a lot to calculate.
Yeah,
I think that's why they leave it to the player, because it's also a lot for the player to calculate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about how there's a lot of skill required, but I don't know about you guys, but I do feel like I learned something.
Yeah.
But the skill level is still a lot to overcome. I don't know. As a kid, if I ever would have purchased this game, just because, I wasn't really into billiards, but also I don't feel like I would know what I was doing.
Going back real quick to the game of nine ball, is that the diamond shape break?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the game that is, like, you know, you get solids or stripes?
Like 16, right?
Is that 12 or...
I think it's 16.
Is it called 16 ball?
Yeah, no, it's not, but 12. I know what you're talking about. That's the one where, like, if you get the stripes in, you're stripes.
Yeah,
and then the
8
ball is last. I think that's called 8 ball.
Yeah, no, it's called... Okay, maybe it is called 8 ball.
Because you have to get the black 8 ball in last.
Yes. Right. Okay.
And you have to call the pocket on that one.
Yeah. I just want to play that game.
Yeah, that game...
That's like what we all play ever.
Yeah. And that one would have been very easy on this system, too, because you can identify stripes and solids this without having to rely on checking out the numbers by pressing the B button. But skills, did you guys feel like you got better as the game went on? Do you feel like you learned something?
Yeah, I think so. I do think that this would be... Okay, comparing it to Lunar Pool, a better candidate if you wanted to learn about pool. You might be a little skewed by the way the physics don't exactly match up to the physics in the real world, but I think you could learn about, like, okay, this is how you do this shot, this is how you do that shot. I do think that this teaches you, if that's what you're looking for in this video game.
And I don't know if anybody's looking for that.
Exactly.
You know, the only educational game I can remember for this freaking system is Donkey Kong Jr.
Good game. Incredible game.
Incredible game. So before we go into the essential games list, we have to do our sequels and spin-off section. And, you know, of course, for a billiards game, you know, what are you going to get, right? What are you going to get in the sequels and spin-offs? Well, how about Side Pocket for Game Boy?
Okay.
It's a smaller playing field, if you can believe it, than the already small playing field. Everything is just monochrome green, so the numbers are always on. You don't get.
They have enough pixel real estate for that.
Yeah, they do. They're worse. The numbers, like, they're just little dots. I don't know how to describe it. I guess it's not pretty.
Okay,
very few pixels.
But the physics work mostly the same way. They're a little simplified, but they work mostly the same way. So it's actually a pretty competent port if you wanted to take it on the go in 1989. You know, I think that's or 1990. I think the game came out for Game Boy, but that's pretty cool. However, one unique addition to the Game Boy version is the ability to play single-player Nine Ball.
Hey!
They fit it in the Game Boy version, but they couldn't do it in
maybe
hours?
They felt more obligated, because unless there's like a link cable ability, nobody's going to be playing two-player on the Game Boy.
Right.
Do they have cable capability?
Really? Yes, it has link. It has the link cable capabilities, and then you can play two-player. But you can also play single-player Nine Ball, which was completely missing from our NES port.
Wow.
So what other sequels and spinoffs could there be, right? How about Side Pocket for Super Nintendo?
I see where this is going.
This version features a completely different... basically, it has like revamped graphics, a jazz soundtrack,
new
sound effects, photorealistic background sceneries during gameplay... And even though the main game modes remain identical to the like NES version, there's a couple of new game modes. This one has five levels in the story mode. Instead of doing the city and then building up to the world championships, you have Los Angeles, San Francisco, Las Vegas, New York, and then, of course, where all the big shots play, Atlantic City is the final destination instead of Las Vegas.
And you know, Mike, I did know that because I also know that the whole thing that they have with the lady, that turned into a full-blown dating sim.
Okay, well, hold on a minute. You're skipping my story.
Are you serious right now?
You're skipping my story.
I was making a joke.
Oh, you were not joking. Side Pocket for Super Nintendo also lets you have 8 lives instead of 5. So that's good, right?
That's good.
More lives is better. And you can there's also a trick shot mode now instead of just the lessons. You can try from 19 different trick shots. You can choose, and then each one has increasing difficulty. So you kind of want to like check off that you completed all 19 trick shots.
Okay.
Okay, now you sound nervous because you've found out about Pocket Gal.
Okay, wait. No way. I'm the third party here. There's no way you just brought up Sean.
I did not know about this. I did not know about this.
And you guys didn't know.
I thought it would be hilarious.
It's the perfect segue because we have Pocket Gal, which is the arcade adaptation of the NES version of Side Pocket, released exclusively for Japan in 1987.
Of course it is.
I can't see what's different, though. It's like, why? Okay, so is that just Side Pocket, but it's called Pocket Gal? Then what about Pocket Gal 2, which is the English version of Pocket Gal? Okay, so wait a minute. We only ever got Pocket Gal 2? We never got Pocket Gal 1? That was exclusive to Japan? Because then there's Super Pool 3, also Pocket Gal, which removes the stripping.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to mention. In Pocket Gal 1 and Pocket Gal 2, the biggest difference from Side Pocket is that women strip as you get the balls into the pocket.
Oh my god.
Thankfully Super Pool 3 got rid of that for us. But yes, Pocket Gal 1
released
and 2.
In North America?
This is insane.
Yes, this is in
on
North
Nintendo
America
system?
Well, no. Pocket Gal is just for Japan. And that had the stripping.
But Pocket Gal 2, you said.
Pocket Gal 2 never came to the NES, but it did come to, I guess, like arcades and stuff like that. But that's
what
the English version.
Yes.
That's the English version of Pocket Gal 1. It's
why is it called Pocket Gal 2?
Nobody would recognize that. And then Super Pool 3, also just called Pocket Gal. Not Pocket Gal 3. Removes the stripping from the game, but is mostly the same. And then in 1992, Pocket Gal Deluxe is released, and that is what the SNES version is based on, the Side Pocket SNES version. Are you guys following along?
A little bit. Yeah.
So there's Side Pocket, Side Pocket, Side Pocket, Pocket Gal, Pocket Gal 2, Super Pool 3, and now Pocket Gal Deluxe, which is what Side Pocket for SNES is based off of.
Right. And okay, then later they released Hunipop.
No, later, later they released Side Pocket 2, okay? Side Pocket 2, also known as Minnesota Fats.
Oh my god.
Pool Legend on the Genesis. Side Pocket 2 expands greatly upon the original Side Pocket by adding various pool games, including 8 Ball, one that you really want to play.
Perfect.
Straight Pool, which I have
no idea what that is.
Me neither. One Pocket, I guess where you just have
it's
to
just
like
one pocket,
or you have to just get it into a specific pocket. and the ability to play against AI-controlled players. So finally, that comes in. There's one big thing I forgot to mention, though. Side Pocket 2 does have a story mode where you play as Minnesota Fats, okay? And while it is pretty good on the Genesis, it is miles better on the Sega Saturn with a full movie included into the game. It's unlike anything I
can
describe.
When you say full movie,
I'm
FMV
talking about
sequences.
Like, yeah, FMV sequences on a Sega Saturn. Wow. Where, and this is in English, where you play as Minnesota Fats trying to work his way through the system to get to Atlantic City. Wow. And win the big game. But no one has been, like, I can't, I'll show you guys afterwards. I have to link it in the show notes. Nobody can understand. This is like Night Trap levels of bad. Is that, do you guys know what Night Trap
yeah,
is?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, this is that level of bad acting. It is unbelievably hysterical. And because it was on Sega Saturn, no one knew about this. Everybody probably just thinks about the pixel art version with the you know, with the text boxes on the Genesis version, but then they adapted it into a full story.
I think that's a bonus
for the Sega Saturn. Yeah,
get our hands on a Saturn.
Does anybody have a Saturn?
Yeah, that's a Let's Play episode. Yeah. I do not have a Saturn, but if you notice, there's a reoccurring theme of like sequels and spinoff section getting really extreme and odd sequels only on the Sega Saturn or Japanese PSX. You know, like that's. That's where those are like the destination for us. That'll be our next system that we have to get to. Forget the Super Nintendo. Forget the Game Boy. Let's just jump right to Saturn.
Let's do it.
We're not done yet. There's one more. Side Pocket 3. Japan only for the Sega Saturn and the PSX. If you can bullet PlayStation 1.
I know.
I know. I'm just saying for the uninformed, they might not know why I'm calling it PSX. If you can believe it, it's actually less advanced than Side Pocket 2 in the sense of like having a full-blown story mode and everything like that. But instead, it has it's like a full 3D polygon environment where you can actually like, you know, line
up
the
angle and everything.
You can use the camera and a free angle and everything like that. But then you can also switch between the two at any time. You can choose between like a 2D top-down view or your 3D polygon view. So I think that's a nice addition. Yeah. It's only available in Japan, so I have no idea what they're saying. I don't know if Minnesota Fats is referenced at all from his legendary conquest of Atlantic City in Side Pocket 2. But I just thought you guys would really like to know that while Lunar Pool had no future releases, Side Pocket really just continued for a very, very long time.
Wow.
Let's move into the essential games list. All right, it's time for the essential games list, and the only thing we're going to do different this time is because we have Lunar Pool to compare it to. After you give your vote of whether it's essential or not, I'd also like you to say which one you'd pick if you could only own one, because you have to keep in mind that this is November 30th, 1987, and so Christmas is right around the corner, and you can only ask for one pool game, so which one are you going to ask for? And I guess if it was Hanukkah, you could ask for it as well. So I'm sorry for not being inclusive. So now we are. Sean, give me your essential games list vote.
You made that much more awkward than I needed to be. All right. So I still need to like get over all of this weird shit you just told me. But now just thinking about Side Pocket as Side Pocket, as I was thinking about it before you told me this whole odyssey, it's definitely not essential. I don't think that any billiards game can be, except maybe like the Sega Saturn version of the FMV game. So in comparison, I've had to think about this like as we've been talking. The only thing that I really like about Lunar Pool that's better than this is just the physics engine, and everything else seems to go above and beyond in Side Pocket, especially like a mini career mode. So now that I think about it, I think I would prefer Side Pocket as a more realistic representation of the game outside of the nitty gritty friction element. So yeah, that's my take.
And is it essential? Oh, it's not. You said no billiards game will ever be.
Right? I said, exactly.
Just a reminder for everyone.
Yeah, wasn't listening.
Just a reminder, no billiards game can be essential. Joe?
I'm going to echo that. I mean, it's going to be tough to get a billiards game on the essential games list. I do not think that this is essential. Plain and simple. I don't think anyone's expecting us to vote it essential. As far as my pick between the two games, I think I still do stick by Lunar Pool. And the reason is not only because of the physics, which I did like. I think the biggest reason is because of the unique and funky tables that you have in Lunar Pool. As much as this does, if you're trying to learn pool, we did kind of come to that conclusion during this episode that this is probably the better game to be playing like real billiards or learning how to, not even necessarily about learning, but about like simulating that. But I feel like, at least personally, I would get bored of this game much more quickly than I would Lunar Pool, where there's zigzagging tables and tables with holes in the middle and a bunch of different things where you can kind of like practice and play around. And I just think it's more fun in that sense. So I guess it depends on what you want, but I think personally, 100% Lunar Pool.
I would like to jump in real quick and just say that I agree that you should like the game based on what the game is, instead of like, it's weird that we jumped to the idea that we're trying to learn pool, because none of us are.
I know, I was saying that a little too much.
No,
there,
but we did all talk about it. Right. Like I don't play NHL like 2K or whatever.
2K whatever, yeah.
Because right. I want to learn hockey.
Right. But the learning is maybe not what I meant necessarily as much as the simulating real pool.
I got you. Yeah. Okay.
Granted, right. That being said, I do think that the physics feel a little weirder in this game also.
Exactly.
Except for the fact that in the other game you could literally adjust the physics. So, Mike, stop me from talking. And
I will save you here, and will say that in terms of the essential games list, you know, I don't know if another game will get on until we get to Minnesota Fats Pool Legend.
I think we take the other games off.
Right. I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, I need to kind of see that movie in full before I make a decision if a pool game could ever become an essential game or not. But of course, I stand by Sean here. I don't know what it would take for a pool game. I think it would have to do something. There's a game called Pocket Jockey for the 3DS made by Game Freak. And that takes horse racing and actually makes it into a video game where it's less about the horse racing part and more about solitaire. And it's I'm serious. And it's beautiful. And it's a great video game. And that's one of my favorite video games, honestly. But
wow.
Yeah, but all that aside, I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't think a straight adaptation of Pool is ever going to make it into my essential games list. I think Lunar Pool was more fun and friendly for the system. And so I think, like, the kid in me would pick that one. Like, oh, my God, pool on the moon. And there's all these different, look at all these crazy layouts. But, you know, if we're being honest, I think Side Pocket's the actual winner of the two. It has so much more going for it, despite the fact that the physics are, like, I don't know, I'd take a little less physics if I got all those other modes with it.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that, knowing my idiot self, I'd pick the inferior game, Lunar Pool. But in reality, I think the winner of these two games right now, and who knows, maybe we'll get more billiards games as time goes on, I think that Side Pocket is the one to play.
Okay.
All right. And that's all the time we have for this episode of Nestalgia. If you love Nestalgia, if you love it, only if you love it. If you like it, just continue on. You could actually probably stop playing right now. But if you love Nestalgia, just tell somebody, you know, I really love this podcast that I've been listening to, and I think you should listen to it too. And they'll be like, for the last time, I told you I don't listen to podcasts. All truth be told, we only live, this whole podcast only rides on the success of you guys. So thank you all always for listening, and we just want to encourage more people to listen. Yeah. So anything you guys can do to help us with that.
If you're ever reviewing something on Amazon that's completely unrelated, just shout out Nestalgia, you know?
Yeah, or if you go to Atlantic City and you play pool, be like, oh my God, this is just like episode blah, blah, blah of Nestalgia where they talked about Side Pocket and I am Minnesota Fats. You know, right? I think that's like how you
is
would
he one
view
of our
it.
Listeners?
Minnesota Fats?
Undoubtedly. Yeah.
He was born in, like, 1913.
What does
so
that have to do with
I
anything?
I don't know if he's still around.
So he is.
I'm going to look it up right now because we're borderline post-show right now. Rudolf Wanderone, who is Minnesota Fats, he died in 96.
Oh.
In Nashville, Tennessee, though.
All right. Can we dedicate this episode to him?
If you didn't, yeah, sure. But actually, why not? That's beautiful. But if you didn't notice, I did call out that he died in Nashville, Tennessee for a reason, okay?
Not in Minnesota.
Yeah, they wouldn't let him go to Minnesota. I guess that, you know, that really only has to do with the fact that the movie, that he was Jackie Gleason and everything like that. Turns out also, Rudolph, or Minnesota, as most people call him, he didn't really have, like, a prolific, like, championship career. He didn't have, like, a lot of championships under his belt as a pool player. But he's very remembered. He's very remembered for being a pool player.
Can we actually make sure that he didn't do anything heinous or like hold like objectionable
views? Do you consider a rivalry with Willie Moscone to be,
yes.
to be heinous? Let's see. I'll look for controversies. Age controversies.
Age. He lied about his age?
I think he wasn't born in 19.
Well, I think maybe that's like a conspiracy thing. Is that like, did he really, was he really born? Oh, he was born in 1913, but sometimes hinted he was born earlier, even as early as 1900.
He hinted at it? Like, what did he say?
He was like, I may have been born in 1900.
And then he winks.
Even as early. And then he died in Nashville, Tennessee.
I love that, like, even as early as, like, he's given like a range of like, you know, where he might have been born or when.
I just like the idea that this was a guy whose name was Rudolph and he said, nah, screw that. I'm from New York. I'm going to be called New York Fats. Then he became Broadway Fats. Then he became Chicago Fats. Then he became Double Smart. Then it became Triple Smart Fats. And finally, Minnesota Fats.
Are these names like a big thing for...
What
like-
does Fats mean in pool?
I don't know. I mean, like, I thought it was something sort of like a Fats Domino. You know, it just sounds cool.
Yeah.
Maybe his name
like
is real.
I can't figure out anything about this Fats thing, but...
But it's like alter...
Jackie Gleason was fat, so there's a reason why he might have wanted to call himself Minnesota Fats.
Are aliases like a big pool thing?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, I don't think so, but
okay,
I would say...
Yeah, so that's why
I would say that, you know, like, in that era... Everybody had a goofy nickname, you know, like...
Yeah, Lou Gehrig.
Yeah. He named himself after a disease.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. All right, this is definitely post-show language. So, I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and we'll talk to you soon. Did you guys know that there's an episode of Family Matters and an episode of Fresh Prince that are exactly the same plot, which both involve the dads of those two families hustling another hustler into believing that they're not good at pool and then proceeding to like rake in all the money?
Do they both have the same song too?
I don't think they both have the same song, but it's just incredible enough that like that happened. Because they were also like they were on competing networks.
Wait, what was Family Matters?
Family Matters was ABC.
So that I guess
so. Fresh Prince was what?
Well, I don't know actually. What did it start?
Fresh Prince Network.
I know it's on like Nick at Night now, but
CBC,
NBC. Oh, okay. So there you go. So yeah, they were on competing networks. So you know, and they were pretty much fighting for. You know, the ratings.
There's also a similar episode of Drake and Josh. That uses the same song.
I think so. And I think, like, you know, for what it's worth, it's okay when Drake and Josh do it. They're just two lovable brothers, you know?
Like, I know.
There's nothing wrong about that. Honestly, it is a fairly common situation to find yourself in.
I don't remember the Family Matters one, but I think it was okay for Uncle Phil. I mean, the other guy was hustling Will, right?
Yeah.
He's giving him a taste of his own medicine.
Are we just saying, like, whether it's ethical or not to hustle?
I'm saying, how many times in your life have you found yourself in that situation where you've been hustled by a pool player, and then your dad comes to rescue you and hustles the hustler into a game of
pool? Like, three tops.
Yeah. I've had that happen with, like, you know, I can't get into it on the podcast.
It's all right. It's all right.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Minnesota Fats.
Rest in peace, Uncle Phil. What's his name?
I do know this.
Avery, right?
James Avery.
James Avery from The Fresh Prince. Rest in peace.
Voice of Shredder.
What?
Voice of Shredder.
Voice of Shredder. Oh. For one particular series.
Right.
No, I just mean like,
wow, you really angered him at that.
Yeah. Be like, you know, be like saying rest in peace, like
for the '80s series though, right? It was the
Yeah. For sure. For sure. Rest in peace, Will Smith. It's bound to happen.
Whoa.
That's not a threat.
Oh my gosh. What an episode. Oh my goodness.